So in chapter 14, then Krishna was describing the three modes of nature and how they would control and bind the living entities. So now in this chapter 15, the Yoga of the Supreme Person, then Krishna is describing how the whole material world works, how the whole thing works. So last chapter we saw how it affects the individual, but now we see how it affects the whole creation and how to get out of it. So this is the chapter where Krishna compares the whole material world to a banyan tree. So text one. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "It is said that there is an imperishable banyan tree that has its roots upward and its branches down, and whose leaves are the Vedic hymns. One who knows this tree is the knower of the Vedas." Then Burijan Prabhu points out here, this banyan tree of the material world is upside down because it's reflecting the actual tree that is in the spiritual realm. That therefore it's upside down. Just like if you see in a pond, you see it, there's a tree reflected. The tree in the water is upside down. And its roots go up to where the other tree starts. So it says, one who knows this, he's a knower of the Vedas. In other words, those who don't know this tree or know the Vedas don't know this tree. They just speculate what's going on. They become entangled in its branches. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains the word ashvata. Means the banyan tree is called ashvata. So swa in ashvata means tomorrow. And ashva can mean not tomorrow. Stha means stay. And it becomes grammatically modified here to ta. It's a double T. The S turns to a T. So you have the dantya ta and then the, how do you say? Hari Gosha and Hari Gada. It means aspirated and unaspirated. You have them both. So the S becomes an unaspirated T. So that, therefore you get ashvatam, which can be taken as that which will not exist tomorrow. So ashvatam will have that, can have that meaning. Material world is ashvatam, not existing tomorrow, both for the devotees and the non-devotees. It won't exist tomorrow for the devotees because they will become liberated tomorrow and attain the spiritual world. The tree won't exist tomorrow for non-devotees because everything they are attached to will cease to exist. Although their attachments will cease to exist tomorrow, the non-devotees' material existence is eternal, as indicated by the word avyayam. So Srila Prabhupada further explains, the entanglement of this material world is compared here to a banyan tree. For one who is engaged in fruitive activities, there is no end to this banyan tree. He wanders from one branch to another, to another, to another. The tree of this material world has no end. For one who is attached to this tree, there is no possibility of liberation. If one can understand this indestructible tree of illusion, then one can get out of it. This process of extrication should be understood in the previous chapter. In the previous chapters, it has been explained that there are many processes by which to get out of the material entanglement. And up to the 13th chapter, we have seen that devotional service to the Supreme Lord is the best way. Now the basic principle of devotional service is detachment from material activities and attachment to the transcendental service of the Lord. The process of breaking attachment to the material world is discussed in the beginning of this chapter. So this basic principle of attachment to the transcendental service of the Lord then means there has to be detachment from the material world. So this is where this key point of the difficulty in it would appear that there's two paths. There's the devotional path, and then there's the path of karma yoga, jnana yoga, and advanced astanga yoga, or meditation. And that they're separate paths. So they can be separate paths for one who doesn't know Krishna. For one who knows Krishna, they're not separate paths. They're part of the same path. So the answer is actually given here, why that is. And that's because devotion means attachment to Krishna. So to that degree that we're attached to Krishna, we're detached from the material world. So if any attachment to the material world remains, that must be removed. So by devotional service, we attach ourselves to Krishna. We also detach ourselves from the material world. But technically, how that detachment is going on is through the processes of karma yoga, jnana yoga, and meditation. That is what is relieving us of these things. So then, with that understanding, then we know we are performing devotional activities. We're in the process of devotional service. But the tool that we're using is detached work to free ourselves of the attachment to karma and to purify ourselves of sin. Then we actually can understand knowledge. Then by this knowledge, we detach ourselves. Just like we see some material desire comes up, right? So then, in that, we use knowledge to cut that desire. That desire comes, so with knowledge, we see, oh, this is a material desire, this is being carried out by the modes of nature. I am the pure spirit soul, separate from the body, separate from this material world. Super soul is the supreme authority. My business is to surrender to him. And material nature itself has created this because of my previous desires. So with knowledge, then one sees this and one decides this has nothing to do with me. So in this way we detach ourselves. So that we are going through this process of jnana like that and using it to break our attachments, that is devotion. But the tool itself is not devotion. That knowledge and the functioning in the material world and the modes of nature and all that, that is knowledge. Right? So it's a separate thing, as we were discussing last time. That their residence of the spiritual world, their love for Krishna doesn't depend upon knowledge. It's called rag, just attachment. So these devotees are called rag atmika. It means that the rag, or their attachment to Krishna, is their life. So the knowledge doesn't really have anything to do with it. So it's a tool that we use. Just like the cooking, the real cooking is the vegetables in the pot bubbling away. But you can't do that without the pot. But the pot isn't actually cooking. The pot does not make cooking. It's when you use the pot in the process, then cooking happens. It's a subtle difference. Is that clear? So this is very important here, is that, in other words, we use the tools of karma yoga, specifically nishkam karma yoga, then the jnana yoga, the knowledge of how the material world functions, or shankhya, and then the process of dhyana, and all total absorption in the holy name, to then free us from all these attachments to the material world. So depending upon our position, depending upon the situation, we may be using one or two or all of these processes. But we are doing it for the purpose of attaining Krishna, for developing our love for Krishna. So it's like if you have, you know, it means there's some impurity there, you have to remove the impurity. Then everything works very nicely. Okay, then second verse. The branches of this tree extend downward and upward, nourished by the three modes of material nature. The twigs are the objects of the senses. This tree also has roots going down, and these are bound to the fruit of actions of human society. So then Srila Prabhupada mentioned here that he wanders from one branch to another. So Bhurijan Prabhu points out is that when you're on a particular branch, that branch is connected to particular twigs or particular sense objects. And then the living entity, then from one birth to another, then he's attracted by different group of twigs, different group of sense objects, and which are then connected with different aspects of the Vedas. So like this, then he wanders around this tree. Then Srila Prabhupada points out, this planet of human beings is considered the field of activities. So this indicates that, then Bhurijan Prabhu points out, this indicates that karma is accumulated only in human life. So this mandala that we are on, this is where karma is created. And then everywhere else in the universe, you're basically experiencing the fruits of that. Though you can behave properly and get the full fruits, or you can behave improperly and lose the fruits, right? Just like you've worked very hard and you get money. So now if you behave properly and use it properly, you get the full benefit of the money. But if you don't, you're not careful, someone steals it, or you gamble, you waste it, and so many things, or you lend it to somebody who is not of good character. So many ways you can lose it, though the fruit was yours. But you lose it due to bad behavior. So on these other planetary systems, if one behaves improperly, then one loses one's position. We see constantly this is going on. Indra does something improperly. He disrespects his guru. So then he loses his kingdom. Then we see that, Ganga Devi. All the demigods were Brahma's court. They were having some big program there. And then in this court, I forget what his name was at the time, but he was one demigod, and Ganga Devi came into the assembly. So as she came in, then the wind blew and her cloth blew up. And so everybody in the assembly turned their head, which is the natural thing. You know, some lady is walking and her clothes blow off or something, you just look the other way. That's the proper pious reaction. So this one demigod didn't do that. He became attracted by the beauty of Ganga Devi. And then Brahma saw this. So then he sent them both out. Said both Ganga Devi has to come down and make an appearance, take birth on earth. And this demigod had to come and take birth as Maharaj Santanu. So this is how Santanu became attracted to Ganga Devi. And they got married. So, and then in this way, then the whole Mahabharata unfolds, and now we are hearing Gita. But the point is because of improper behavior, they can lose their position. But it's not karma as such. It's just they've already got the karma. Now it's a matter of what they do with it. You know, they're already on vacation. So it's just if they act properly, then the vacation lasts. If they don't act properly, they get thrown out. You're too rowdy in the hotel and they turf you out. So like that. So then the point is also here, by knowing this tree, one can get out of the material world. By not knowing the tree, you're bound in the material world. By knowing this tree, you get out. So Krishna is making that point. Now he will continue. Text 3 and 4. The real form of this tree cannot be perceived in this world. No one can understand where it ends, where it begins, or where its foundation is. Though with determination one must cut down this strongly rooted tree with the weapon of detachment. Thereafter, one must seek that place from which, having gone, one never returns, and there surrender to that Supreme Personality of Godhead, from whom everything began and from whom everything has extended since time immemorial. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he comments that philosophers have their own opinions about the nature of the world. This world is real, it is false, it is eternal, and so on. And then he continues, because the real form of this tree cannot be perceived, we are unable, out of ignorance, to cut down this banyan tree of the Are we unable, out of our ignorance, to cut down this banyan tree of this material world? No, it must be cut down. This tree is so strongly rooted. su virudha mulam, that it cannot be pulled down. The axe with which we must chop it is made of detachment and renunciation, and it is sharpened by knowledge and discrimination. We must cut down this tree completely by full detachment, lest our minds run again towards sense gratification. Then Srila Prabhupada describes the process of detachment and attachment of the real tree. It is now clearly stated that the real form of this banyan tree cannot be understood in this material world. Since the root is upwards, the extension of the real tree is at the other end. When entangled with the material expansions of the tree, one cannot see how far the tree extends, nor can one see the beginning of this tree. Yet one has to find out the cause. One has to search out the origin of this tree. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, through this One has to search out the origin of this tree, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, through the association of persons who are in knowledge of that Supreme Personality of Godhead. Then by understanding, one becomes gradually detached from this false reflection of reality. And by knowledge, one can cut off the connection and actually become situated on the real tree. The word asanga is very important in this connection, because the attachment for sense enjoyment and lording it over the material nature is very strong. Therefore, one must learn to learn detachment by discussion of spiritual science based on authoritative scriptures. And one must hear from persons who are actually in knowledge. As a result of such discussion in the association of devotees, one comes to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Then the first thing one must do is surrender to Him. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, is the original root from whom everything has emanated. To gain favor of that Personality of Godhead, one has only to surrender. And this is the result of performing devotional service by hearing, chanting, etc. So by performing this devotional service, we come to the platform of surrender. So here we see the detachment and the knowledge are very much connected. So as we saw before in the previous chapters, then Krishna is pointing out knowledge actually means realized. Yeah, so it says one must learn detachment from someone by discussion of spiritual science based on authoritative scriptures. And one must hear from persons who are actually in knowledge. So we see here, and then there's another another purport will come up. Many times you see he'll hear learn, cultivation, all these things. So there's learning knowledge, cultivating knowledge. So this is technically called manana, means where we're contemplating. We hear shravana, then we contemplate manana. So contemplation means that we try to understand what we've heard. We contemplate it, we get an understanding. Right? We may say, well, we realize means we got a deeper understanding, but that's not realization. That's just having a deeper understanding. And we practice it. So that is all on the platform of manana. Then the next platform, which is called realization, nididhyasana, this means that we are performing the activity or applying that knowledge because we feel that that knowledge is of great value and importance, and we directly see the importance and we apply it in our life. So it actually becomes part of how we think, how we behave, like that. So understanding the knowledge means theoretically we have it, jnana. But then vijnana means it's applied. So here when it's been mentioned, this knowledge, there's these two aspects. So it says someone who's actually in knowledge, or someone who has knowledge, means they're living. So all those qualities, humility, detachment, pridelessness, all these different aspects of knowledge, these come when one is realized. One hears about them, and I let's say I have that verse memorized. I can say that I have knowledge, right? Because I know the thing. But I don't necessarily act like that. So when I start acting like that, then I'm considered a person in knowledge. So there's that difference is there. So the first is we cultivate. We learn it, and cultivate means we apply it. Another term is called swadhyaya, which means study. So study in the Vedic term does not mean only just poking your nose in a book. It means you poke your nose in the book, you know, or hear from authorities, in some way gain authoritative knowledge. Then you practice it. And you teach it. So that's all within the realm of swadhyaya, of study. So part of studying is practicing, and part of that is also and is teaching others. That is full study. Otherwise, just the book part of it, that's only called shravana, hearing. So that's the first step. But knowledge means you actually apply it. Right? Swadhyaya is not complete if you only study. Nowadays, many think, I'll just sit down and study. And this is why Krishna says that jnana is a lower platform than the jnana is can only be attained by those who are free from sin, who are free from attachment. Because if I sit down and just study the books, what actually purifies me? Because I hear, how do I go from shravana to nididhyasana? Right? I can't. I'll sit around and think all day, I'll get some intellectual understanding. But because I'm not applying it in the life, I'm not actually doing some practical application, then what happens is I can't go to nididhyasana. So if we've already practically done these things before, where we are very purified, then in that state you can hear, contemplate, and directly put it into realization. Therefore, in the beginning, the karma yoga then will be more emphasis on the activity. And then with time, the actual emphasis is more on the knowledge. Because as by performing the activity, the knowledge comes. So as far as getting out of the material world, the best start is at the karma yoga rather than jnana yoga. One would think it's higher, but it doesn't. And then those who are more foolish think they'll start with meditation. They'll sit down and every morning for 10 minutes or 20 minutes do their meditation and think that they're advancing very nicely. But that's not the system. We, as Krishna explained before, is that even in the process of yoga, then the meditation only comes after you've purified yourself by nishkam karma. Right? Then otherwise one doesn't get anywhere. So this is very important to note, this point between hearing the knowledge and contemplating it, or contemplating it, that means you think about it. Cultivation means you apply it. You practice it. Then you'll get realization. Then you become one who is in knowledge. So that's an important point. So just hearing about it, that's the first step, but then we have to cultivate that. Yeah. And then Prabhupada also points out this thing for attachment and lording it over the material nature is very strong. So these are the two root principles of why we're here. You can cut attachment for sense enjoyment and lording it over material nature, then we're on the Brahma-Bhuta platform. Like that. It's simple. All the anarthas go back to these two. Basically, this is where it all starts from. A later purport, Prabhupada will explain how that works. Like that. Then Krishna further describes the process of surrender, because he said then one should surrender to that supreme person. Text 5. Those who are free from false prestige, illusion, and false association, who understand the eternal, who are done with material lust, who are freed from the dualities of happiness and distress, and who, unbewildered, know how to surrender unto the Supreme Person, attain to that eternal kingdom. So this is the process that's being given here. So Srila Prabhupada points out here. The first qualification is that one should not be deluded by pride. Because the conditioned soul is puffed up, thinking himself the Lord of material nature, it is very difficult for him to surrender unto the Supreme Personality Godhead. One should know by the cultivation of real knowledge that he is not Lord of material nature. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is the Lord. When one is freed from delusion caused by pride, he can begin the process of surrender. One has to get out of this false notion that human society is the proprietor of the world. and then one has an understanding of things as they are. He becomes free from all dual conceptions such as happiness and distress, pleasure and pain. He becomes full in knowledge. Then it is possible for him to surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So we see here, first qualification is one should not be deluded by pride. His pride means, then you think you are the Lord. Then we can't surrender to Krishna. And then from that, it alludes to it, that if you get rid of the pride, you can get rid of attachment to material nature. So basically, the pride causes the attachment. Right? So if you can get rid of the pride, the attachment goes. Right? Because it's coming from down, the problems are coming from up. Right? So if you can get rid of those, the down problems, the anarthas are coming from the root, the essential, the fundamental anarthas are coming at the root of the tree when we enter the material world. And then all the other different varieties of activities and attachments are coming after that. They're just variations of the attachment, what you're attached to. So you have 8,400,000 basic, general areas of attachment. And then within that, then there's some fine tuning, like that. And then the desire to lord it over the material nature. So here we see lording it over material nature is the first point, is that Krishna is the Lord, but then we become envious of Krishna, we want to be the Lord. So that creates pride. And then from this pride comes the attachment. You get rid of the pride, then you get rid of the attachment, the material attachment. Therefore, Krishna is constantly talking this pridelessness. Freedom from false ego. Because this is what creates our problems in the material world. Trinadapi suni jena, tororapi shahishnuna, amani namana dena kirtaniya sadahari. So this also is making that point. That false pride, that is going to keep us here. You can't go farther if that is there. One cannot get out of the material world on a permanent basis until one's free from pride. So that's why it's always being humble submission to the Lord, humble service attitude, submissive inquiry. All these different terms are being used to bring out the point of developing this pridelessness. Text 6. That supreme abode of mine. Okay, so then he's saying he will leave and go to that. If you surrender to the Lord, you'll go to that place where one never returns. So now Krishna will describe that place. That supreme abode of mine is not illuminated by the sun or moon, nor by fire or electricity. Those who reach it never return to this material world. Srila Prabhupada says, we should be captivated by this information. That's his point. Because if we're not, we're going to be captivated by the material world. Right? So we're either captivated by this idea that this whole material world is this banyan tree, it's a reflection of the actual eternal spiritual realm. And then we can go to that eternal realm, which is not illuminated by sun, moon, fire, or electricity. If we're not, then we will become caught up in samsara. So then here, Krishna continues. Text 7. The living entities in this conditioned world are my eternal fragmental parts. Due to conditioned life, they are struggling very hard with the six senses, which include the mind. Here Krishna points out the mama eva angsa, that they are eternal, sanatana. So then the Mayavadi's idea that the living entity is separate is illusion. But here Krishna is pointing out that this is not the case. The individual is always an individual, but he becomes captivated by Maya. Text 8. The living entity in this material world carries his different conceptions of life from one body to another, as the air carries aromas. Thus he takes one kind of body and again quits it to take another. Then, text 9, the living entity, thus taking another gross body, obtains a certain type of ear, eye, tongue, nose, and sense of touch, which are grouped around the mind. Thus he enjoys a particular set of sense objects. The foolish cannot understand how a living entity can quit his body, nor can they understand what sort of body he enjoys under the spell of the modes of nature. But one whose eyes are trained in knowledge can see all this. So here, what Krishna is pointing out is that if you don't understand this material nature, this is what happens, is one is dragged around by the mind, and the six senses. Means it's the five senses grouped around the mind. So the mind, whatever it is thinking, whatever its desires are, accumulated desires, creates the next body. That takes it on to the next form, and then when one leaves the gross body, the subtle body goes, the mind has those particular desires. So that creates the next gross body around it. The next set of senses are then attached to this mind. And then one takes birth again. So then Krishna says that the foolish cannot understand how someone leaves and then how they get the next body, all this. But one in knowledge, they can see this. He says, one whose eyes are trained in knowledge can see all this. In other words, you hear, then you can see. Otherwise, to try to work by the principle of seeing and learning what is the absolute won't work. That is the lowest level for the mundane scientists, you know, and living entities that are attached or situated in anamoy, the first platform of consciousness. Their idea is, I will just see the material world and I will figure everything out. Right? But it doesn't work. And even if we take the Vedic system of just going through all these things, very long process, can take millions of lifetimes, still one may not see. Because the Lord is a person. He wants to reveal himself, he can reveal. Because here in this material world, you can only see up to the roots of this tree, maximum. You can't see what is on the other side. You can't see the tree on the other side. So they cannot understand these Mayavadis. They can't. Purujan mentions here, those who lack knowledge are called vimudhas. They are blinded by unending attempts to enjoy the senses. So now Krishna will explain what is the cure for this ignorance. You know, what it means by those whose eyes... that was the point. Eyes are trained by knowledge means that we are hearing from authority. You hear it, then you look and you can perceive. Bhaktivinoda Thakur mentions that the factual, the best knowledge is that which you can see, pratyaksha. But there's two kinds of pratyaksha. One is where you start with pratyaksha, or pratyaksha means using your senses to gather information and get an understanding from there, like modern science. So pratyaksha, because the senses are imperfect, therefore you can't get perfect knowledge. So starting with pratyaksha, based on what the senses are bringing in, that will never give knowledge. But if we hear first from authority, shabda, then based on that shabda, then we apply it in our life and look around us, what we see. Then through those eyes of knowledge, or through the eyes of shastra, chakshush, then what we see, we will see it now not with imperfect senses, but with perfect knowledge. Then we see the material world as it is. So we sing. We're still using pratyaksha. So Bhaktivinoda says when you can see, after shabda, you can apply that in your life where you actually see what it's talking about. Like if shastra says, material world is a place of misery. We've been thinking, we look around, think it's great. And now we hear this and it tells what are all the things in misery, birth, death, old age, disease. We look around and we go, yes, that's actually what it is. So now we see, but now it's based on shabda, on knowledge. So then it becomes realized. Is that some sense? Then and then Krishna explains here. The endeavoring transcendentalists who are trained in, or who are situated in self-realization, can see all this clearly. But those whose minds are not developed and who are not situated in self-realization cannot see what is taking place, though they may try to. Then Krishna explains how he's, even those who can't see what they're looking at, they're just looking at the material nature, but how Krishna is what they're actually looking at. The splendor of the sun, which dissipates the darkness of the whole world, comes from me, and the splendor of the moon and the splendor of fire also come from me. I enter into each planet, and by my energy they stay in orbit. I become the moon, and therefore supply the juice of life to all vegetables. I am the fire of digestion in the bodies of all living entities, and I join with the air of life, outgoing and ingoing, to digest four kinds of foodstuff. I am seated in everyone's heart, and from me come remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. By all the Vedas I am to be known. Indeed, I am the compiler of the Vedanta, and I am the knower of the Vedas. So we see here that Krishna is pointing out that even the material world, everything that actually makes anything work, is coming from him. Nothing works without the sun, right? No life can go on without the sun. And then we're dependent upon the vegetables and all these greeneries, and Krishna is that. The nourishment of the vegetables, that is coming from Krishna. Then we need fire. We're going to survive, to keep ourselves warm, to cook, to do all these things. And that is also there. Then even we get something to eat, Krishna is the fire of digestion. So without the fire of digestion, there can be no health. It's mentioned in the Ayurveda, all diseases start in the stomach. When the digestion, these things aren't proper, then that throws off the whole balance of this whole body, and then all the diseases can come up. Because the diseases are already there. It's not that they come from somewhere else. The disease is already in the body. That's why I said is the body is a place of disease. It means there's 3,000 diseases. They're always resident in the body. It's just that if the health is balanced, the mucus, bile, and air are properly balanced, none of these diseases can come up. Like if there's good discipline, then if there's a good strong social body, then indiscipline doesn't come up. The rogues and thieves and rascals can't become prominent. But if you lose that discipline, then they come up. Thieves are always there in the society, improperly behave, but they don't do anything because they know they can't. So the same way the diseases are always in the body, but if the body is balanced, then the diseases don't manifest. So when the digestion goes off, then immediately the body starts to go out of balance, the nature, the condition of the body. So then these diseases start to manifest. So without Krishna as the fire of digestion, then nothing will be digested. And he says the four kinds of foodstuffs. This means all food. It means your solid foods that you chew. Then your liquid. They're kind of like in between, like sweet rice. You put sweet rice on the plate, you lick that. When you pick it up, you lick it off the hand. Then you have very, very liquid things, not like water, but a little bit in between those two. That if you want to get them off the plate, you have to pick them up and suck them. Like that. You don't generally see so much. It's practiced very prominently in South India. When you're eating, you want to eat. Get rasam off the plate. There's nothing on the plate. It's just rasam. And rasam is basically like water. But you get it off the plate by the process of catching it in your hand and sucking it out of the hand. So that's sucked. And then you have like water and things in a glass that are drunk. So like this. So from liquid to solid, Krishna digests all of it. There's nothing. So drunk means water and other things like that. So Krishna digests all that. So without him, there's no digestion. No digestion, there's no health, no life. You know? So Krishna is actually the essence of everything. Then he mentions here that Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains about Krishna's thoughts here, about him. He's situated in everyone's heart. He is knowledge, remembrance, and forgetfulness. So Krishna is explaining here. Just as the fire of digestion is within the stomach, I am situated in the hearts of all moving and non-moving beings, as the principle of intelligence. Indeed, from me, the intelligence principle, comes remembrance of things once experienced, forgetfulness and perception born of contact of the senses with their objects. Having thus described, Then, having thus described how he helps living entities in a bound condition, he next states in the words beginning by all the Vedas how he helps them attain liberation. Then Srila Prabhupada describes in his purport, the Vedas give us direction by which to understand Krishna and the process of realizing him. The ultimate goal is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. By understanding Vedic literature, one can understand his relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. By performing the different processes, one can approach him, and at the end one can attain the supreme goal, who is no other than the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So here we, So because Krishna is in everyone's heart, he is the principle of intelligence. And from and in part of intelligence is memory. And from that, then we remember things, we forget things. Krishna makes it so we remember things and we forget. Because if we remembered everything, we would be very dissatisfied. Because unlimited births, we've had so many bad experiences, it's better we forget them. So then here, Srila Prabhupada, Bhujan points out that Prabhupada has very clearly brought out this point of Sambandha Abhideya Prayojana. By understanding Vedic literature, one can understand his relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that's Sambandha. Then, by performing the different processes, one can approach him. That's Abhideya. So in other words, Abhideya means the process by which you approach. So if you're performing Nishkam Karma Yoga to approach Krishna, by purifying oneself of material contamination, that's bhakti, that's devotional process, that's abhideya. If one is using the process of knowledge, one is understanding the knowledge given in the scriptures so that one can detach oneself from the material world and this way progress towards Krishna and surrender to Krishna, then that's bhakti, because it's part of the process of bhakti. Right? If one is absorbing oneself always in hearing, chanting, and remembering the Lord, as in yoga, but the purpose of that is to please Krishna, remember Krishna, then this is the process to approach him. So it becomes bhakti, becomes part of the whole process of the practice of bhakti. Right? So in that practice, you have your sadhana bhakti and you have your bhava bhakti. So these are still not prema, but we count the whole thing as bhakti. Because it's part of the process how to get to Krishna. In this way, then they are counted as bhakti. Right? They are the tools by which we approach the Lord. We do. So now this next section, this is then describing these three levels of Sambandha Abhideya Prayojana. So there's five verses here. So the first three are known as the Trishloki Gita, like that, where Krishna then establishes himself, mentions the living entities and their position, the transcendental and the conditioned living entities and the liberated living entities. Then he mentions beyond both of these is him, and he is the Supreme Person. So text 16. There are two classes of beings, the fallible and the infallible. In the material world, every living entity is fallible. And in the spiritual world, every living entity is called infallible. So Srila Prabhupada explains, as already explained, the Lord in his incarnation as Vyasadeva compiled the Vedanta Sutra. Here the Lord is giving, in summary, the contents of the Vedanta Sutra. He says that the living entities, who are innumerable, can be divided into two classes, the fallible and the infallible. The living entities are eternally separated parts and parcels of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When they are intact with the material world, they are called Jiva Bhuta. And the Sanskrit words given here, Kshara Sarvani Bhutani, mean they are fallible. Those who are in oneness with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, however, are called infallible. So this oneness that is being mentioned here, and Bhurijan Prabhu points out, is the word kutastha, means oneness in desire. So when the desire is in oneness with the Lord, one becomes infallible. And is when one's desire is separate from the Lord, one becomes fallible. So one may think, well, that's just a very simple thing. But that's actually what all the other chapters were explaining to us before this, in this last six chapters, is that we only can have desire. So we can either desire to serve Krishna and be kutastha, means situated in oneness with the Lord, then we are in the spiritual realm. Or our desire is to be separate from the Lord, and then we get bound up in the material nature. So in the spiritual realm, those who desire to please the Lord, then Yoga Maya arranges unlimited situations in which to please the Lord, to give unlimited variety to the Lord, variety of happiness. And in the material world, then the same thing. Mahamaya, then you want to enjoy separate from the Lord, then she gives so much variety, practically unlimited variety, on how you can not serve the Lord and be entangled here in the material world. So this is the essential point, is becoming one in desire, kutastha. That's why the Gaudiya Vaishnavas specifically, though the Vaishnava principle is they accept liberation, they don't accept the Sayujya, or merging with the Lord, in the Brahman or in the Lord. But the living on the same planet, desiring to live on the same planet, same opulence, same features, or to be an intimate associate, these are spiritual desires. But we see that the Gaudiyas even leave these, because kutastha, they want to be in oneness with the Lord, whatever He desires. Therefore, aslishiva padatam ki nashtumam adarshanan marahatam karotuba yatatata bhavidatatulam patom at prana napastusa evanapara. That whatever Krishna desires, that is what we want. Whether it makes us happy or not, that's secondary. Right? We know that our position is to serve Krishna, and when Krishna is pleased, we'll be pleased. So what pleases Him, that is what pleases us, even if it pleases Him to make us unpleased. That is fine with us. So there, the oneness of desire becomes even closer. So in Vaikuntha, they still have the desire for these spiritual liberations. It's connection with the Lord, but they want to be on the same planet as the Lord. So it's their desire. But they'll serve the Lord in that desire. Then you get to Golok, then in Dwarka, Mathura. Then there's also the desire to serve the Lord is there. It's more close. The oneness is more close. But still, it is regulated by rules and regulations. You're attached to the rules and regulations. So you want to serve the Lord according to His desire, but through the medium of rules and regulations. So that means that it limits His desire. Not limits, but it creates a particular form for expression of His desires. It has to be through the rules and regulations. But then Vrindavan means that this kutastha is complete oneness and desire. It's just whatever Krishna wants. Follows rules, doesn't follow rules, makes them happy, doesn't make them happy, they don't care. If it pleases Krishna, that's good enough. Right? If it was up to Mother Yashoda, Krishna would not go out to the forest every day. No question of it. She wouldn't let him out of his sight. He would stay in Nanda Baba's house all day, every day, eternally. If it was up to her. Because when he goes out to the field, how does she serve? So it's with great difficulty that Krishna and Balaram and everybody else convince her that it's okay that he goes out to the forest. It's not that he just, it's time to go and he picks up his rope and his his stick and his buffalo horn and just waves goodbye and says, see you later, Ma, and walks off. No, it's a whole number. He goes out to the gate, the cows are there, all the cowherd boys are there, the cowherd men are there, the gopis are there, all the birds and everything, all the other animals that are in the forest, because they're not in the forest, they're all right there also. Because Krishna came to Vrindavan, they left the forest and came to Vrindavan. Right? They came to Nandagaon. So they're all right there at the border where the wall is around the village. Everybody's there. It means everybody in Brajalila is there at that point. And then all the cows want to go out, the cowherd boys, they want to go out, all the birds and peacocks and parrots and monkeys and everybody else, they want to go out, you know. And the only thing that's not allowing that to happen is Mother Yashoda's affection. Because she's worried he'll go out there, so many things will happen, so many beasts, this, that, you know, so many demons have been coming to Vrindavan, maybe another demon will come along. So it takes him a long time to finally convince her that it'll be all right. You know, Balabhadra's there, his older brother, and then there's a few other. Mandalibhadra, Balabhadra. I think there's another one or two that are older than Krishna. And they're going with swords and all kinds of weapons. And so they're convinced, no, they're there, they'll take care, and all that. And then with all this, after it takes, I think, like half an hour or so, like that, finally then she's convinced that during this time, she's already fed him breakfast, everything. You know, he's already rested out, and she has to feed him something again, and this and that. And then finally, she'll agree that he goes, because everybody else wants her to go, and Nanda Baba tells her it'll be all right. Baladev says it'll be all right. Krishna says it'll be all right. And finally, she lets him go. But otherwise, she wouldn't let him go. Right? So because it pleases Krishna to go, she's letting him go. Like that. And then she sits, and then the whole rest of the day she's in total anxiety what's happening with Krishna. When it's time for Krishna to come home in the evening, she's not just peacefully waiting there, and she's in the kitchen, and then he walks back in the door and throws his rope in the corner and goes, hi, Ma, and then goes off and, you know, turns on the television or something. No, she's waiting at the gate, pacing back and forth, wondering why, you know, it's you know, 3 minutes to the time he's supposed to be here and he's not here already. Like that. So she's waiting for when, from the distance, you can see the dust of the cows. That means not even the cows, just the dust. And then when she sees that, she feels a little better. Otherwise, just total anxiety the whole day. So the point is that the residents of Vrindavan, is that then when Krishna's with Mother Yashoda, he's totally absorbed there. He doesn't really remember about the other pastimes and all that. So only when those devotees come and say something, then he goes there. Then when he comes back, then the gopis are in anxiety. Right? And then when he goes out at night, then Mother just showed everybody else, then they're sleeping. And they have to remember Krishna that way, then the gopis are with him. So in like this way, you see that the older gopas and gopis, and the younger gopas, then the gopis, they all have their different times with Krishna. No one has a monopoly of always being personally with Krishna. Part of the day is spent with Krishna, and part of the day is spent in separation. So this makes it more intense. It deepens the separation, makes the being together more intense, more relishable. And then being together, then it creates such a, how you say, a happiness, that then they're so worried that he'll leave. Right? So even when they're with him, they're thinking he's going to leave. So even they're in anxiety there. So like this, it becomes a very interesting mix of the deepest, most intense transcendental emotions. And that's because of this point of kutastha, oneness and desire. So to the degree that that oneness is there, to that degree the depth and intensity of transcendental experience is felt, and the pleasure to Krishna is more. The love of the residents of Vrindavan is more pleasing to him than even the prayers of Brahma and Shiva and, you know, all these others, all the pomp and everything like that. He's living sleeping in bed with 16,108 queens. And at night, while he's sleeping, he's not thinking about the queens, he's not thinking about Ugrasena or any other, he's thinking about the residents of Vrindavan. In his sleep, he's sometimes calling out this gopi's name or that gopi's name. You know, and if the queens get too, if ask about it or get too proud, he says, don't, you know, just, if you don't behave properly, I'll just leave all of you and go back to Vrindavan. He says, I'm only here out of duty to my parents, Vasudeva and Devaki. Otherwise, I go back to Vrindavan. So like that, it's that depth of affection is so much greater. It attracts the Supreme Lord. It means, Vaikuntha, the Lord can, of course, he reciprocates in that, and everybody's very happy and satisfied. But at the same time, his mind's not there. Vaikunthapati is thinking about Krishna and Vrindavan. It's interesting to note in all the major Vaikuntha temples in India, like in South, your Tirupati, Sri Rangam, Guruvayur, all these temples that one thinks of as like the seat of the Vaikuntha rasa. In the room where they put the deity to rest, then they have a nice bed, they have mirrors all over the ceiling and all that, and they have pictures on the walls of all the Vrindavan pastimes. And in Tirupati, when one goes to take darshan, everybody's saying Govinda. Nobody's saying, you know, Venkateshwar. No one's saying Venkateshwar. They're all saying Govinda, Govinda. And I asked one man, I said, why do you say Govinda? This is Venkateshwar. He says, this is Venkateshwar, but he likes to, his favorite thing is to remember his pastimes in Vrindavan. Therefore, we say Govinda. So Vaikunthapati, everybody's standing in front of him and offering prayers, but his mind is on Vrindavan. And then Krishna and Dwarka, he is performing all his activities, but his mind is in Vrindavan. So Krishna in Vrindavan, his mind is just in Vrindavan. Because of the affection there, the oneness of the relationship between the devotees and him is so strong that Krishna just can't leave. Right? Even if he physically leaves, he doesn't leave. His heart doesn't leave. Interesting. Okay. Then, next one. Text 17. After he's described the living two kinds of living entities. Besides these two, there is the greatest living personality, the Supreme Soul, the imperishable Lord himself, who has entered the three worlds and is maintaining them. Then Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments that the word tu, but, used in Uttama Purushastu Anya, distinguishes the Supersoul, the Supreme Purusha mentioned in this verse, from the two other Purushas, the fallible and infallible, mentioned in text 16. Then in text 12 to 15, he was describing how he is the supreme. He's the maintainer of everyone. He is, Vibharta, the maintainer of all living entities. Then, here he gives the conclusion of Vedanta, text 18. Because I am transcendental, beyond both the fallible and the infallible, and because I am the greatest, I am celebrated both in the world and in the Vedas as that supreme person. So Prabhupada's purport explains, no one can surpass the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, neither the conditioned soul nor the liberated soul. He is therefore the greatest of personalities. The Supreme Personality is exhibiting and diffusing his spiritual effulgence, which is the ultimate illumination. That Supreme Personality also has a localized aspect as Paramatma. So now this is explained Sambandha in very clear, succinct details. Means there's a living entity, the conditioned soul and the liberated soul. Then beyond that, there is the Supreme Lord Himself. He is maintaining the three worlds. So now that introduces the material world. It introduces the Lord as the maintainer of both these infallible and infallibly living entities, and the material and spiritual nature. So the whole sambandha is established here. Okay, and then what one should do, the Abhideya aspect, 19. Whoever knows me as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, without doubting, is the knower of everything. He therefore engages himself in full devotional service to me, O son of Bharata. Then the conclusion here, text 20. This is the most confidential part of the Vedic scriptures, O sinless one, and it is disclosed now by me. Whoever understands this will become wise, and his endeavors will know perfection. Whoever understands this will become wise. So wise means realized. So when one understands this factually, he realizes it. He becomes wise. Wise means you apply it. Understanding, you may apply it or not. But realization means you apply it. You can't not apply it. Just like we may know chanting Hare Krishna is a Yuga Dharma, and it's the best thing, right? And the process to go back to Godhead is chanting Hare Krishna. And going back to Godhead is the best goal, topmost goal. We may understand it and have no doubt that if we want to actually get into spiritual life and all that, and really take seriously a spiritual goal, then this is what we have to do. But it's only an understanding if we don't do it. But when we actually realize it, then we know, yes, I am the eternal living entity, part and parcel of the Lord. My duty is to serve. I am bound by material nature. The process is chanting Hare Krishna. And one who seriously chants, then they can go back to Godhead, free themselves from this material entanglement. I will do it if I realize it. If I only have an understanding, I won't do it. So realization means I apply it in my life. That's wise. So like that. So whatever we gain, we hear, we contemplate, we apply it how best we can, practice it, and then we realize, and then it becomes very much part of the life. So Prabhupada then comments on this point, O sinless one, anagha, and then summarizes the chapter. The word anagha, by which Arjuna is addressed, is significant. Anagha, O sinless one, means that unless one is free from all sinful reactions, it is very difficult to understand Krishna. One has to become free from all contamination, all sinful activities. Then he can understand. But devotional service is so pure and potent that once one is engaged in devotional service, he automatically comes to the stage of sinlessness. While one is performing devotional service in the association of pure devotees in full Krishna consciousness, there are certain things which require to be vanquished altogether. The most important thing one has to surmount is weakness of the heart. The first fall down is caused by the desire to lord it over material nature. Thus one gives up the transcendental loving service of the Supreme Lord. The second weakness of heart is as one increases the propensity to lord it over material nature, he becomes attached to matter and the possession of matter. The problems of material existence are due to these weaknesses of heart. In this chapter, the first five verses describe the process of freeing oneself from the weakness of heart. And the rest of the chapter, from the sixth verse through the end, discuss Purushottama Yoga. As stated above, to understand Purushottama Yoga, we have to be sinless. Thus, this chapter discusses breaking our material attachments and understanding Krishna as the source of Brahman, as the maintainer, the Paramatma, and as Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Finally, knowing all this, one surrenders and becomes one with him in desire and service. That is the conclusion of all Shastra, the yoga of the Supreme Person. So here points out is that the first weakness or the fall down is the desire to lord it over. And as we increase that, then we become attached to matter and possession of matter. So therefore, if you perform this activities without attachment, right? Then you're breaking that first, or this actually the second weakness of heart or attachment to the matter. Then you have to cultivate, while doing that, cultivate knowledge. So Nishkam Karma Yoga includes jnana. That's why all these chapters are here, to give you the jnana by which to perform Nishkam Karma Yoga. That knowledge then breaks the idea that I am the Lord of this material nature. And we find that Krishna is the Lord. So by performing activities, prescribed duties, without attachment, in knowledge, we actually break this weakness of heart. And this two points is why we're here. So it's basically that simple. You remove the attachments that are based on the desire to lord it over material nature, and we're out of here. It's basically that simple. We're only here because we want to lord it over material nature. And then from that, we become attached to the material nature and then become totally bewildered in this banyan tree, going from branch to branch, and we don't know what's going on anymore. So that is what's going on. Yeah. So then Srila Prabhupada has summarized all that. Yes, ma'am.
Krishna Chakravarti Thakur says that the whole Mahatattva is resting on the Krishna's feet. So then my meditation on the street is also a very strong way to understand what is the real tree and what is the anu.
Yeah. Means one can understand by that. In any process where one remembers Krishna, Krishna, his name, form, qualities, pastimes, that is the process by which to dissolve or get the understanding of this tree and actually understand the real tree. See, it's from the real tree, then the whole, it's been reflected into this material world. So Gita mainly is describing how to break out of here. How to break our attachment, how to, you know, situate yourself properly in devotional service. The details of devotional service are given in Bhagavatam. Like that. Those are where the details are given. The examples of people doing it and everything. The fineness of it. So there you actually learn what's the real tree. So from Gita, see, if you want to know what the real tree is, we can't do it without understanding. We have to be very... We have to be able to distinguish between matter and spirit. If we don't study the Gita first, and we try to study Bhagavatam, then what will happen is we will think that the spiritual world and the material world are the same. We can't tell the difference. So first you have to be able to tell the difference between matter and spirit, and between transcendental relationships and material relationships. Then the Bhagavatam becomes meaningful. Even then, because the Gita has taken us to that basic point, of understanding we're not the body, we're the soul, we're a servant of the super soul, the material energy is carrying out all the activities here, we're not actually doing it, and our purpose is to serve the Supreme Lord in devotion. When that's understood, then we can come to accept the, that means we accept that the Lord is the goal, ultimate goal. He is the Lord and Master, we're His servant, and the process is devotional service. Once that's fully accepted, then Bhagavatam starts. Then from Bhagavatam, that continues. But then there's 9 cantos to bring us very much up to the point where we can actually accept the spiritual world as it is in the 10th canto. Even without those first 9 cantos, then one can't fully understand the essence of the Bhagavatam. Because in the 10th canto, when the Lord displays His pastimes with His devotees, unless one can distinguish between matter and spirit, one will think it's just a mundane display of activities. Otherwise, so many people read Gita, read Bhagavatam, all this, all the professional Bhagavatam reciters and all that, and it's all just taken very cheaply. You know, and many have the conclusion that all these pastimes are just, you know, performance in the mode of goodness and all that. And then some of them, you know, that goes okay for some aspects. But they can't understand Krishna's Vrindavan pastimes because they don't seem to fit within the rules and regulations that they're used to. So you get some will just say it's just, you know, Krishna's a manifestation in the mode of goodness. and then there's Brahman behind that. Or some will say he's a manifestation of goodness, Krishna, all these Leela avatars, and the real thing is Vishnu and Vaikuntha. You know, what we see here in these pastimes is just a mode of goodness expansion they can't understand. So because they haven't gone through, they haven't heard from devotees. I think that Prabhupada makes that point very clear. One should hear and learn from others who know. So by hearing from the acharyas, then we get to understand what's going on. We can distinguish between matter and spirit. Therefore, Prabhupada mentions that you have to have that fine discrimination, knowledge and discrimination. Then the detachment can be applied. You have to cut the tree with detachment, but you have to have the knowledge and discrimination to be able to use that axe. You know? It means you may have the axe of knowledge, of detachment, but how do you cut it if you don't have the proper knowledge and discrimination? Like that. So that aspect is there.
Sometimes we read that the original tree is the cultivated tree under which Radha Krishna sit. We could also have, like, when we're talking about the here, the reflection, we're talking about it more in terms of analogy. Is there anything said about in that term in terms of the real tree?
It's analogy, but at the same time as if one understands, if one can understand or have a glimpse into the real tree, one can see how the reflection works here. Just like from seeing the shadow of a cow, you can't understand what a real cow is. But once you understand that there's a shadow and a cow, then by looking at the cow, one can see where all the different parts of the cow are in the shadow. But it won't be in the same way. I mean, the actual cow isn't, you know, 10 feet long with, you know, 5 foot long legs and a 2 foot hump on the back and all that, which may be in the shadow. But you can see the elements of the hump and the head and the legs and the body and the tail and all that. So by understanding that there's two, and then by study of the material nature, how it works, and study of the spiritual nature, how it works, you can see the reflection here. And you can see how it's just a perverted reflection. It's not something separate. That's a very... Sahotra Maharaj makes that point very strong in his book, Substance and Shadow. Is that if we are... We should not be foolish enough to think that we can either think of something or create something that will be... that doesn't have its dependence on the spiritual realm. Like Krishna says, I am the light of the sun and the moon. So it means anything here is all, the potency is coming from Krishna, the reflection is coming from the transcendental realm. So we can't think of something other than what Krishna gives us to get back to the spiritual realm. Like Krishna says, you take the Vedic culture and you follow that in Krishna consciousness. And you go, and in this way you'll progress. We can't dream up our own process. It's outside of that, because it doesn't work like that. It means one has to see the proper connection between the origin and the shadow.
When you do that, that's a reflection on the reflection.
No, it's. Not so much reflection on the reflection. The reflection is already a reflection. That's based on material desire. Therefore, it manifests how we think it's manifesting. Right? It's just like we have material attachment. We think something is very wonderful, but it's just made out of the material elements. So it's you remove that desire, then you see things as it is. You just see it as it's just with Krishna's material energy. It's his inferior energy. But still, something. The last?
Last.
Huh.
I see the moon is covering the world and that's kind of your same idea?
Meaning?
Meaning that the restrictions of reflection of the two types of view come out differently. So according to the copy of the reflection of the
yeah, it becomes more, I'd say, more perverted. Because here it's, that was discussed in the last chapter about the modes of nature. So then in those in ignorance, it's like being covered by the womb, passion by, like, the animals, and then the human was like the smoke in the fire. So because the lust is so much, they become so covered. But so the perversion is there. But even if we take it in its very pure, pious form, even the relationships and the cut down on the lust, and we see like in the upper planets, and the, you know, their detachments and everything are very great. But still, it's a perversion of the actual relationships, because there's still the idea that I am somehow or another enjoying in this. While in the spiritual realm, you don't have that. There it's simply they are the servants of the Lord. They're simply the Lord's servants. And they're doing it to please Him. So He is the only enjoyer in the pastime. And the others are the enjoyed. In the material world, even you have very refined, you know, proper relations between husband and wife, parents and children, friends and other friends, leaders and subordinates, all these different relationships. Still, there's the idea that I am enjoying in this, even though it may be very pious and very proper and according to the scriptures. So you basically end up with two enjoyers, you know, two friends. They're each enjoying each other's company. So they behave in a certain way that may endear them to the other person, but for the purpose of enjoying that, rather than pure service mood. So even though it's proper according to Shastra, it still has that perverted aspect. But the pious perversion, basically, it at least has the form of the spiritual pure version, pure origin. But all you have to do is change from I am the enjoyer to I am the servant. And then connect that in relationship to Krishna and his devotees, and not with the material elements. So you can get an idea. The analogies and everything make more sense. The pious lifestyle creates the analogies that we can very easily relate to, and then transfer the consciousness from that to the spiritual platform. While the impious lifestyles and that sometimes get so strange that it can't be. It's very difficult to understand. One devotee in England was telling one preacher there. I was discussing this point of you know, fathers, the shelter, and these kind of things. And the devotee said it was very strange that one day he was talking to one boy, you know, some teenager, and he was trying to explain to him about God. You know, kid had never thought about God and this and that. You know, it intrigued him. So he was asking, he was explaining about, you know, the Supreme Father, Father of everyone, the Supreme Authority, and the boy just couldn't relate to it. He had no experience of it, you know, in his lifetime, because when he was young, or as long as he remembers, there was no father. He just grew up with his mother. So he didn't know what it meant to have father as an authority. And he just couldn't understand, you know, material nature is the mother, Krishna is the father. All he knew was the mother. So because of the situation, it became very hard to even understand the natural analogies. So the Bhagavatam then shows us the proper application of the culture and all that, how to apply it in our life, how to purify ourselves by following the prescribed duties and in relationship to Krishna. And at the same time gives us the spiritual realm. And then one can see the reflection here. And then with time, the reflection here, it will remind him of the original. Now, if you know something about Krishna and his cows, when you see a cow here, you think of Krishna's cows. Otherwise, in the beginning, you see a cow and then you think of, you know, dharma and protection of the cow and, you know, all the duties that go along with it. Though they're pious, but they're still connected with the world here. Right? But then with times become more purified, then we see a cow, we think of Krishna. You know, we see a river, we think of the Jamuna. We see a forest, we think of Vrindavan. Like that. But in the beginning then we approach through the prescribed duties. And that. We know that Shastra says, that Guru Sadhu Shastra says, I should behave like this, I'm doing like this, it's my duty. And I do so in a detached way, without desiring for the fruits in knowledge of my relationship with Krishna in the devotional process, and we become purified. Then we naturally come to that platform of pure affection and attraction to Krishna. Is that? Does that make any... Are you happy with that, or...
Huh?
Are you happy with that, or...
What was the technical term used for that? It's
Tree Shloki. Oh, it means, oh, infallible? Mm-hmm. Means the three shlokas itself, or the three shlokas are called Tree Shloki Gita. Like you have the Chatur Shloki Gita, so this is the Tree Shloki Gita. So like that you have, there's all kinds of, I'll try to find it. Hotramars has done a small course on that.
On the
Chatur Shloki Gita, Tri Shloki Gita, then there's called the Charan Shloka, the different, so there's certain verses in the Gita and groups of verses that have specific names that all the acharyas, everybody comments on and does something. So this is one set, it's called the Tri Shloki Gita. So this
it's very significant for me at least. This is actually the first shlokas I looked in when I got my Prabhupada speaking.
Really? Wow.
I really didn't understand. So I was reading on Gita, I really couldn't understand. And so this is the first ones I turned to. And Krishna is actually speaking so simply. But because, yeah, all the other Gitas are so influenced by Mayavad, you get the point, you get the fallible and the infallible, that you can understand, you know, this a conditioned soul and a liberated soul. But then it speaks of the third one, that one who is beyond this. And that is completely bewildering for the others. But so when they write their Gitas, when they come to this point, in their commentaries, what they do, they don't make a commentary.
Yeah.
They just leave that.
Yeah.
Everything else they can write, they'll write something nice. When they come to this one, I know it's Peter's Arabic, and they just have it. Nothing to say because it just completely defeats their logic and their presentation in their mind. So I couldn't understand. I was always bewildered by it. As soon as I read Bhagavad Gita, the first thing I turned to was very sure. And Prabhupada made such a beautiful statement in that. For me at that time, it's still one of my favorite, and I always keep it, I relish that, treasure it as a very important point in my life. Because he makes a very concise statement, and he says, oneness doesn't mean there is no individuality, but there is no disunity. Mm. It's really struck me with that purple. Mm. Mm. Never heard anything like that before in all the other books or Gitas.
This way, it's very. This point of Chintabheda Beta Tattva, the simultaneous oneness and difference. Difference is always there, but there's that oneness in that purpose, oneness in the desire. But there's two living entities that have a oneness in desire. So you have to have both. So Madhva's thing of just two, then you can't explain this point. And the other acharyas, Vishuddha Dvaita, Vishishta Dvaita, they explain something of it. But they're only explaining kind of that. They're not explaining so strong that the two is also there. But Lord Chaitanya then brings it all together. Simultaneously, these are going on. So then you get a very, very special. The understanding of what is experienced is much deeper and different than what the others will have an entrance into because of that. Very nice point. Notice unity. The shloka is again. Text 16. There are two classes of beings, the fallible and the infallible. In the material world, every living entity is fallible. And in the spiritual world, every living entity is called infallible. Besides these two, there is the greatest living personality, the Supreme Soul, the imperishable Lord Himself, who has entered the three worlds and is maintaining them. Because I am transcendental beyond both the fallible and the infallible, and because I am the greatest, I am celebrated both in the world and in the Vedas as that Supreme Person. You can see why they will leave these shlokas. Very hard to twist that around. It says, greatest living personality, imperishable.
Beyond the infallible.
Yeah. Yes, I think there's one purport where Prabhupada is explaining that you know, generally we think of, well, you know, there's living entities and there's Krishna and spiritual realm, and you know, it's all just kind of, we think of it all so much together. It is in rasa, but in actual tattva is here. You have the material world, which is completely its own tattva. Nothing to do with the soul, nothing to do with the spiritual world, everything. It's just the opposite. Ignorance, it's temporarily manifested. There's no happiness. It's nothing. It's just dead matter. Then you have the living entities and the spiritual realm. Like that. So you think of that. But then beyond all this is Krishna. Because all this comes from him, so he's actually beyond spiritual. I think Prabhupada uses the term. Material world, the spiritual world, and then beyond that, beyond spiritual, he's something else. There's Krishna. He's something different. We come from him, so we're part and parcel. So we have some of the attributes and qualities and all this. But he's something else. The spiritual is an energy. He's the energetic. So he's something else, totally, you know, there's no question we can understand him, because he's something different than what we are. We can understand the spiritual realm, we can understand other living entities, but we can't actually understand him, because he's something else. So only if he reveals himself, then we can know. But with the devotee, Krishna doesn't, you know, remain on that platform. He comes and exchanges with the devotee out of that affection. Because on that platform, he's Atmarama. He's self-satisfied. But he expands to increase that pleasure and to by interacting with his energies. That Lord, what is it? Krishna's Kaviraj Goswami explains that Krishna is originally is one, and then he expands as two eternally. And then now those two have become one to taste this rasa. That he has come to taste the rasa of what is the servitor taste. Like that. So he knows what he is, Aparama tastes. Greater than that is he is the enjoyer taste. But now, to understand the highest, he comes as what his servants taste, specifically Srimati Radharani. So then Krishna tastes these different levels. Padma was saying that Lalita mentions that we're not interested in that person who is beyond everything, who's the source of everything and all that. We're interested in that person who is interacting with his devotees, and specifically means with Radharani. Is that Krishna who is with Radharani? We're interested in him. We're not interested in Krishna as the source of everything. So it's just for the... Well, that's why they, I guess these are called the tree Shloki Gita. That's how it calls it. Yeah. Tree Shloki Gita. You know, it's like the essence of Vedanta. Vedanta also deals with Avideya, a lot with Avideya, but it's done through this kind of vocabulary. So it's harder to understand. So this makes it very clear. Anything else? So we should end here. Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveda Bhakti Vrinda ki.